Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota. And William Tekyu is a poet, he's a writer, he's a retired English teacher who's been a longtime listener and contributor to KAXE and KBXE, and he's a huge Dylan fan. He used Dylan's music regularly in his classroom over the years, and he's here to talk about the genius of Dylan. Good morning, William.
Good morning, Katie, and good morning, all of our Dylan-esque fans in KAXE radio.
Thank you so much for joining all of us today. Maybe we'll start off by talking about your relationship with Dylan.
Well, I guess for like a lot of folks in their youth, which is so far beyond me now, it's on the other side of the horizon. However, in my high school days, and I'm not sure where this, maybe through my high school English teacher, I had heard Blown in the Wind, not sung by Dylan, but by Peter, Paul, and Mary. And after hearing that song, I was just taken aback. I was not writing poetry at that time. That happened, I guess, about the time I was a senior in high school. But I was starting to gain an appreciation of it because it seemed so different, a different way of writing, of communicating with the written word, in contrast to prose and journalism, et cetera. So I discovered Dylan. My discovery of him was at that time. And then later, as I listened and read more and more often of his lyrics and was starting to try to do my own poetic expression, I just felt like I was learning so much through his work, you know. Listen, I'm not a musician, so I don't have that perspective to bring to the discussion. But as a writer, I felt like his work was very instructive to me, and always sort of set a bar, you might say.
Hmm.
Well, then later, you know, when I started teaching high school English, I realized, or I felt that some of his songs could be. His lyrics could be taught the way I was teaching Frost or Emily Dickinson or Walt Whitman or Lawrence Sherwin Getty, E.E. Cummings, Mary Oliver, et cetera, et cetera. And so I developed some lesson plans. I was allowed to in a very conservative school district, Mesa, Arizona. I don't think you can, if you were any farther right, you would be left there. They allowed me to use Dylan's lyrics at times, as long as I was using them to teach to the school district's objectives. Mm-hmm. And into Mesa, Arizona school district's credit, they signed off on it. And my students, most of whom had heard about Dylan and his poetic expression in songwriting, but hadn't really listened to much of Dylan or read his words, they just really responded when I shared some of the songs and the song and the lyrics within the context of a lesson plan. So that continued. And then just after retiring from teaching, I've kept up with his work and I've, you know, just marched along with my own. And, I really hope, I know there's somebody out there, some retired teacher or student who can take the ball from us today and take the relay baton and encourage high school English teachers in the Northland to tap into some of Dylan's poetic lyrics and use them as a springboard to teaching American literature and creative writing in their classes.
Yeah. What do you think, William, makes Dylan's work so brilliant?
Well, that's a great question, Katie, and I appreciate you asking that. Now, first of all, and I've thought about that from time to time,
mm-hmm.
And brilliant is an adjective, and so at the end of the day, what I would say is brilliant or preeminent, moving, is going to be different from you or from any of your listeners. It's all sort of a matter of personal taste, right? And for sure, I would, if someone would say, what, like you just asked about why do they think it's brilliant, well, they don't take my word for it. I'm a very poor source. I'm a very small fish in the literary ocean. I would take the word of the Nobel Prize Committee, where they said it's brilliant. I'm paraphrasing, but it's brilliant because he uses poetic expression in songwriting in a way that over a body of work over a lifetime, no one else has. I mean, he was the first songwriter to be awarded in 2016 the Nobel Prize for Literature. So I think that speaks volumes, not to mix metaphors here. And I think I would also say it's brilliant, just if you consider the hundreds of recording artists, hundreds of other songwriters and singers that, you know, are Hall of Fame folks in their genre that have such regard for Bob Dylan's songwriting that they have covered his songs. It's just amazing. I mean, the guy could have stopped writing at 30 and lived off the royalties from all the folks who were covering his work. So I think those two factors suggest his brilliance. But since you asked me, I think things such as his humor, it's very edgy, it's satirical, it's and that's not easy to do. You know, ask Mark Twain, ask the folks who do Saturday Night Live how easy it is to write like that, or Bill Maher, for instance, George Carlin, et cetera. I think he does something that I've always tried to do. I put it in the back of my mind when I write a poem or a story or even a feature article for a newspaper. But I try to write up to the reader. And I think that's a tough thing to do, because the temptation, I think, of writers everywhere is to write down, to write to the lowest common denominator. But he never does that. So I think that suggests his brilliance. And along those lines, he stays ahead of the reader. And by that, I mean, how many times have you, I, your listeners, how many times have we been reading something? It may be a poem, it may be a story or a novel, a play, dialogue in a play, and all of a sudden we find ourselves filling in the next word, getting ahead of the person who wrote the words. And to me, that's just a big no-no. I think the writer needs to lead the way. Otherwise, why read that work? Hmm. Why listen to that song? Or, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If you know what's going to happen next. The other thing that I think he's outstanding at, and why we are all celebrating his work and so moved by it over the years, is that he felt comfortable in continually experimenting. And I'm not just talking about when he, which is significant, introduced electric music, mm-hmm. rock music, to folk music. I think that's a whole other subject. But in terms of literature, I think of his experiments with Hard Rain. I think of his ongoing experiments with topical songs, whether it's Who Killed Davy Moore or Hurricane, mm-hmm. With just so many pieces, so many parts of his body of work. The guy, from album to album, I mean, he's produced, 60 albums now? From album to album, you can hear a progression. Well, that doesn't just happen by accident, I don't think. I think it happens because he, to satisfy his standard of writing, he's always looking for another way of organizing those words and expressing them and using just every literary tool in the toolbox, whether it's allusion, metaphor, extended metaphor, simile. He's very experimental. And just parenthetical on that, the difficulty of being experimental, when it happens, it's a great thing. And I hear it in Dylan and his work consistently over a lifetime. But last night, Kathy and I heard a group in Superior called Similar Dogs, and we've heard them over the years. It's a duet, you know, in a small venue, the Thirsty Pagan, and Joe and Sarah, they experiment with standards, with Gershwin. They experiment with John Lennon's work, with Dylan's songs, and Maria Muldaur, and just, you know, different artists, and they do it musically in a way where it just sounds so natural. And it's like, well, why hasn't somebody else done that before? Well, it's like so many things that seem so easy, it's incredibly tough to do. So yeah. I think, you know, whether it's musically or in terms of literature, his work with experimentation is should be lauded. I did an article, as you know, recently. It's in the issue of the Reader, Duluth's weekly newspaper. And the thing that I really pointed to that makes Dylan's work stand apart from so many other songwriters' work, not that the other folks are bad, okay? It's just that he's, I think, at another bar, you know, up another, closer to that star that everyone tries to reach, is his empathy. He can so often put himself in someone else's shoes to create a character or communicate a real-life person and what they're struggling through. On top of that, I think he's an incredible editor of his work. Now, I know he said, things come to me, I just write them down. Well, yeah, that does happen. However, I think what he may or may not want to admit to, I think he really works over his first drafts or second or whatever. I think whether it's physically doing it on the page or it's happening in his head as he's writing it, like Langston Hughes did or Kerouac did, and oftentimes, not always. So he's a great editor. And finally, I think, I tip my hat to the guy because his work is universal. Mm-hmm. It's as universal as Woody Guthrie's or Steinbeck's or Shakespeare's or W.B. Yeats, W.H. Auden, Shelley, the list goes on and on.
Right.
But it's not easy to write something from the heart, especially if it's related to love or death or something that really bugs you, that eats at you. Like, unfortunately, this week we're commemorating the passing of George Floyd. But, you know, when something is something you want to really share and get it out there on the page with the written word, to have that resonate in someone whose face is not in the mirror, that's a real challenge, and it is so seldom done. But he does it so consistently. So for all those reasons, I think he's just a brilliant poet, and I'm glad we can talk about him in the present tense, that he is an octogenarian today, and I hope his family is with him and saying, "Hey, Dad, way to go! Blow out the candles. I want some of that cake." You know,
that's William Tekiu. I'm talking with him about Dylan. He's a retired school teacher. He used to teach Dylan in his English classrooms, and I'd like you to take us into the classroom if you could. To lower the veil a little bit on radio. We talked about a couple different songs that you would use in your classroom, and you let me sort of decide which ones I wanted to look at today. I wonder if we could listen to Love Minus Zero, and then we'll come back and talk about how you might break it down in your classroom.
Absolutely.
Let's take a listen.
My love, she speaks like silence, without ideals of violence. She doesn't have to say she's faithful, if she's true like ice, like fire. People carry roses and make promises by the hours. My love, she laughs like the flowers. Valentine's can't buy her. In the dime stores and bus stations, people talk of situations, read books, repeat quotations, draw conclusions on the wall. Some speak of the future. My love, she speaks softly. She knows there's no success like failure, and that failure's no success at all. The cloak and dagger dangles. Madams light the candles. In ceremonies of the horsemen, even the pawn must hold a grudge. Statues made of matchsticks crumble into one another. My love winks, she does not bother. She knows too much to argue or to judge. Midnight trembles. The country doctor rambles. Bankers' nieces seek perfection, expecting all the gifts that wise men bring. The wind howls like a hammer. The night blows rainy. My love, she's like some raven at my window with a broken wing.
That was Bob Dylan with Love Minus Zero. I'm talking with William Tekiu. He's an instructor. He's going to teach us a little bit about Dylan's music there. How would you break that down?
You're scaring me, Katie. How would I break it down? You mean in terms of a lesson plan?
Yeah.
That could be used in a high school English class, maybe junior high also. Okay. So, and I believe you mentioned if folks wanted this lesson plan, they could go to KAXE's website.
Yes.
And they could find it as a PDF. Is that correct?
Yes. When I put our conversation on the web later, I will attach that so people can download that if they so choose.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Mm-hmm. And if sometime in the next few days, whatever, if a listener goes to my website, roadreflections.com, I'll also get it posted there.
Okay.
So having said that, here's how it would roll mm-hmm. when I used to teach American Lit and creative writing, when I used Love Minus Zero, No Limit. Okay, so it's like 12 things. I would first ask students to write the overall feeling or mood that they feel that song lyrics of 179 words, communicates to them. How are they moved, and what is that feeling? I think that's very important. Then a few lines from the song that support that answer. Mm-hmm. The next thing I would ask them to define simile, and after that, why do they think the poet uses simile? And there's a lot of simile in that song. Why do you think he uses it throughout mm-hmm. the song? A matter of opinion, but I'm trying to get the students to pay attention to that particular writing technique, because that's something all English teachers, whether they're teaching essay writing or personal narrative, etc., we want students to use writing techniques because we know they work mm-hmm. over time. Certain things have proved very reliable, and simile is one. Okay, so then I would ask them to use their textbook or go online and define imagery. And then what are some other poems or song lyrics that they can think of that use images? Mm-hmm. And an image is not just a visual image. It's words that relate to our senses. And that's there. Number eight. Mm-hmm. What do you think is an advantage of using imagery in a poem or song? And then I ask them to list four images in Love Minus Zero, No Limit. After that, I ask, why is the use of rhyme, how is the use of rhyme in that song different from Blowin' in the Wind? And that's another example of his willingness to experiment, to do something a little different, you know, in terms of his written expression. Mm-hmm. So, you know, after that, what are two allusions? And you know, it probably, let's agree on some definition of an allusion, mm-hmm. Okay? A-L-L-U-S-I-O-N. What are two allusions, things he refers to in, not indirectly refers to in the song, and explain the allusions that he uses in that song. And then bonus points, ring the bell, bonus points. I always like to leave students the option of going from what we in the classroom would call knowledge, understanding, and then going to synthesis and application. In other words, okay, now you try doing this. And right. Specifically what I mean is they don't have to do it. They're not going to lose anything on the in-class assignment, right? But if they want to pick up some more points, they've got an option. What's the option? Here it is. Okay, write a paragraph of at least 100 words or a poem of at least 75 words that uses at least three of the writing techniques used in Love Minus Zero, No Limit. And then I caution them, do not use the first person. Mm-hmm. It's way too easy to write about ourselves. So it's more of a challenge to use the third person or maybe the second. So at any rate, that's an example of a lesson plan that I've used. And that, you know, it doesn't have a shelf life.
Right.
So it could be used, you know, I think it could be used at the collegiate level also, but, you know, for sure, high school level English class or creative writing class. So
right. I don't know if we were going to go through a whole other thing with Who Killed Davy Moore, but I think I might. I want to ask you a couple questions, and we might play Who
sure.
Killed Davy Moore on the way out, and then
yeah.
I'll attach
yeah.
that lesson plan to the website. So William Tech U is a former high school English teacher, and we're talking Dylan. I was wondering if you could answer this question. What do you think it is about his poetry that makes it so universally approachable and inspiring?
Whether, you know, I don't know if it's conscious or unconscious, probably a mix of both. But I think one thing that really helps is that you know it's poetic in the sense that it is compressed language. When you read his work or hear his work, you are not listening to an excerpt from a novel, which is more extended in its expression. Or you're not hearing someone read a newspaper story. You're listening to something different. One of the things that sets poetry apart from other genres is that compression of thought, saying a lot in a few words, which obviously I haven't mastered. I'm working on it. But he's great at boiling it down. It could be a topical subject. It could be a heartbreak from his life. Or a love, you know, and I think of Boots of Spanish Leather, and I think of Girl from the North Country, and I think he can say a lot, few words, and he can use language that we all relate to. He has a lot of connotations in his writing, and strong images, images that come out of left field, that you have to work for, and then when you do work for those images a little bit, you're satisfied. And I think those are some things that people, whether it's in the Northland or in England or China, wherever, the space station, that people can, are taken by his writing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you have time, but I did write a piece, a very short piece, called Dylan.
Yeah, I want to
call it Roger Maris, but
I wanted to get to that because you're going to read it at a poetry reading on Wednesday, an online poetry reading. Can people?
Yes.
Can people join that poetry reading?
It's set up, and I'm not familiar with Zoom. I don't really do it. This will be an experiment for me.
Uh-huh.
But folks who participated in the and won something, I won honorable mention in the Dylan Fest poetry competition, and other folks like Miriam, who does the Highway 61 Revisited on KUMD in Duluth on Saturday evenings. 5 o'clock, I believe, 5 to 6, she'll be reading. But folks can, if they can go to the Duluth Dylan Fest website, I believe they can go from there to check into that Zoom reading.
Okay.
And so I won't be reading this one upcoming. I'll be reading the piece I wrote for that competition called Miles from Home. Anyways.
Well, I'd love to hear it.
Okay. So we're going to roll. We're going to roll. And by the way, kudos to you for playing what an outstanding poem, Last Thoughts on Woody Guthrie. Oftentimes I would just play that the first few minutes of the first class of my American Lit semesters, and it just knocked everybody out as well it should.
Mm-hmm.
But so this was written on the morning of Dylan's 37th. birthday in 1978, Dylan goes like this.
Okay.
From my kitchen windows facing east, tomato plants stare down a late spring frost. In and out of growing season, I wonder what feeds but doesn't wash away. Some say spring memories that winter well. Others guess anything grown inside survives. Of course, there is something to be said about one poet's garden-grown songs. Cross-cultivated among rows of varying climates, Zimmy's birthday strums up from a day in May marked on my calendar. His words and music, first heard on Minnesota's Iron Range, reach my ears that listen beyond the last fence. Like tomatoes, I too sang along. What chlorophyll bends his voice across the stems of ears toward a cactus sun? How does it stop and turn over acres of cool, dark air between our gates? Double-plowed grasses that sprout through the garden's frosty real estate know. His bounty feeds above the topsoil. A long time before ripening under his stage name, he was one note playing against the roar of the world. Unlike tomatoes, his songs cannot be harvested. Still, in sun, in snow, by sound, by syllable, I try.
William Tecue, thank you.
You're most welcome.
Have a great day celebrating Bob Dylan. I will attach
you
your lesson plans awesome. To the web story. And I thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today.
It was so much my pleasure. And let's all, again, enjoy Dylan's words and music on the day of his 80th trip around the sun.
Thank you.
Most appreciated.
Airy Voices is made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and by the citizens of Minnesota.
Who killed Davy Moore? Why? And what's the reason for? Not I, said the referee. Don't point your finger at me. I could have stopped it in the eighth and maybe kept him from his fate, but the crowd would have booed, I'm sure, at not getting their money's worth. It's too bad he had to go, but there was pressure on me too. You know it wasn't me that made him fall. You can't blame me at all. Who killed Davy Moore? Why and what's the reason for?